Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
From KMOX Sports.
Okay, boys, here we go.
Welcome to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line.
Those mid swings, and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Gray Bar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Here we go.
Now, Matt Pauly on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, man, let's get going here.
Here we go. Let's go.
On a Friday evening, we welcome you in. It is time for a Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Have you till 8 o'clock this evening as we wrap up the week together. We've got a busy, busy show tonight. In about 10 minutes, we'll talk with one of our favorite people, Earl Austin Jr. We'll preview the Billikens basketball season with him and also talk through his great honor that he received earlier this week. Missouri football, they've got the weekend off, but then they are going to go into a mad sprint to the finish, and it's an interesting time to look at the Tigers and kind of assess where they're at going into an off weekend. Eli Hoff from the Post-Dispatch and STL Today is going to join us. We'll talk a little Mizzou basketball with him as well. And then next hour, we've got Kevin Wheeler, our good friend. We'll talk through a bunch of baseball stuff with him, and we'll also hear from Patrick Mahomes next hour, his weekly conversation from 96.5 The Fan in Kansas City. We are going to hear from him coming up in the 7 o'clock hour as well. Let's start with the news of the day. And I wasn't in yesterday. Joe Pott was in. I got the experience of trick-or-treating with my daughter. I was Kyle Sixt is here. Kyle, I won't spend too much time on this. I grew up in a fairly religious household, and we really did not do much Halloween stuff. So I realized when I was like walking around a neighborhood last night with my five-year-old daughter, outside of like going to just a few houses here or there, something, you know, just real close, that was the first time in my entire life I had ever experienced like full-fledged trick-or-treating.
Really? Yeah.
Yes.
You go all out for it. It's no joke. You go and get as much candy as you possibly can. That's the way I did it.
My daughter did well. She
nice.
Did well. So I got to experience that last night. Maria alluded to this earlier. There's a thing out there, the trick-or-treating potato. And if you do like a Google search for it, you can find that there's like, I guess it almost started as like a social experiment. And now some people give kids the choice, potato or chocolate. And of the group of six or seven kids that my daughter was trick-or-treating last night, of course it was my daughter who chose the potato while all the other kids chose the candy.
That's awesome. She's better than I was as a kid. I'm taking the candy every single time.
She took the potato. My wife's actually going to cook it up for her tonight.
Nice.
So she's going to eat her trick-or-treating potato this evening. So that was kind of my story from the from last night. But with that, I wasn't here for the show yesterday. Joe Pott was in. Didn't get to go through the news of the day yesterday, which was not surprising or shocking by any stretch of the mind that the team did not pick up the options on Keenan Middleton, Lance Lynn and Kyle Gibson. There'd been some reports out there leading into the decision yesterday that the Cardinals were at least considering picking up the option on Kyle Gibson. I never totally bought into those. I did not. And look, if you've been listening to this show, if you've been watching our roundtables that we've done on online all along, I've been talking about the Cardinals dropping payroll by moving on from Lynn and Gibson. To me, it was always just kind of a foregone conclusion that that was going to happen, and it did officially happen yesterday. So that's Kyle Gibson did a nice job. Lance Lynn did a nice job. Like, neither of those guys were bad this past year, but at the same time, you have to be able to get that level of production from guys that you're not paying $11, $12, $13 million a year. And that's how much you were paying those guys. And I understand why the Cardinals did it. Like, I wasn't upset at those signings last year. I thought the Cardinals offseason last year was fine. I would have liked at the time, I probably would have liked for them to maybe do something more in the bullpen last year. But I also say that we can now sit back and say the acquisition of Keenan Middleton paid out nothing because he never appeared due to injury. Maybe I would have liked them to bring in another outfield bat in the offseason last year, but I didn't think it was like this overwhelming need. We can look back on it now and say, yeah, overwhelming need, considering the offensive production that they did not get and the step back that they got from a Jordan Walker. But in the middle of the offseason, I was fine. I thought the Cardinals did enough last year to contend, and if their offense, if they would have scored more runs, if they would have done better with runners in scoring position, they would have been a playoff team. They didn't, and they weren't, and now we're in the reset. But I was never upset about Kyle Gibson or Lance Lynn being signed. I thought it made a lot of sense for where they were at last year. What makes more sense moving forward is for them to try to develop those type of players, where at the very least, the middle of your roster can be almost entirely filled with homegrown talent. And when it's homegrown, it costs less for a while, and that's where they have to go. And that's part of what they're trying to do with this player development reset. And then today the news came down that they have claimed right-hand pitcher Robert Munoz off of waivers from the Miami Marlins. Look, his numbers aren't good. I'm not going to sugarcoat this. He made his major league debut this past year. 18 appearances, 17 starts, 2-7 record, had an ERA that was elevated. Even his numbers at AAA weren't especially good, had an ERA at about 5 or so. Here's the thing with him, and we'll talk more about this with Kevin Wheeler in the 7 o'clock hour. I'll be interested to get his thoughts on Munoz. But you take a flyer on him because he throws hard. And you hope that you can find a way to get him to throw strikes. And you hope that you can maybe look at him and create a pitch mix that other pitches can work off the fastball more effectively, especially if you're able to really take advantage of his velocity, whether that means he stays as a starter or maybe goes to the bullpen to try to create some more velocity that way, whatever you want to do. But it's an interesting pickup, 24 years old. He takes a 40-man roster spot, but certainly no guarantee of a major league job, and he seems like a guy who is likely to start the season in Memphis. Unless something happens, he takes a 40-man roster spot. 40-man roster right now at 36. There's a bunch of guys like Tink Hintz and Tekoa Roby who still need to be protected prior to the Rule 5 draft. We'll see how aggressive the Cardinals are in adding to the 40-man roster to protect players from being selected in the Rule 5 draft. There's no guarantee that, you know, it happens where you claim a guy in the offseason and then you need that 40-man roster spot and you move on from him and somebody else. There's guys who get claimed 2, 3, 4 times in an offseason. That certainly happens on occasion. So there's some upside on Munoz because of his ability to throw hard, but he has certainly not yet been able to put it all together. All right, we'll take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk with our friend Earl Austin Jr. We'll talk with him about the SLU basketball season, which begins on Monday, and also talk to him about his great honor from earlier in the week. That's all coming up. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX.
It's better over here. Now at T-Mobile, get 4 5G phones on us and 4 lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you, and also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.
I cannot wait until Monday, because Monday right here on KMOX, we are going to hear St. Louis Billikens basketball. They are opening up the season in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. They've got a neutral site game against Santa Clara. And of course, right here on KMOX, you hear Billikens basketball with Bob Ramsey and Earl Austin Jr. And Earl joins us right now to help preview the season. Earl, really appreciate you taking some time with us. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
I'm good. First and foremost, congratulations to you, because you pick up an amazing honor earlier this week, named as an inductee into the Missouri Sports Hall of Fame. Completely well-deserved. Just another Hall of Fame for you to head into. You're in a few. What did you think? What's it like when you get that call and you find out that you are going into something like that? It's such a cool honor.
It really is. I'm just extremely honored and very blessed to get such recognition. And it's just, you know, something I've always loved to do, you know, talking, writing about sports for a living. That's an honor in itself. But to get that kind of honor bestowed upon you is it's just nothing but a blessing. I'm lost for words, and that doesn't happen to me often.
And it's quite the class. You're going in with Anthony Bonner. I'm sure that has to be special for you. There's another KMOX connection, because Jim Jackson, Cardinals broadcast engineer. We could go through the entire list, but it's a really cool group of people that are being inducted in the class of 2024.
It really is. AB, a former Billiken, all great, NBA for Shine High School. But like you say, Jimmy Jackson, who I sat next to on Billiken broadcast for 3 decades now. I think that's really cool to see Jim become a Hall of Famer. I was really excited when I saw his name on that list.
Yeah, we were too. Just to see both those names, and not taking anything away from anybody else, but the two KMOX connections with you and Jim, really, really cool. So congratulations, and I think everybody here at KMOX is just so happy that you are on that list. Let's jump into what's going to happen on Monday. Now, have you ever been to that arena in Sioux Falls, South Dakota? They run events there all the time. I've heard cool things about it. Is this going to be a first trip for you, or have you been there before?
No, it's my first time. I believe it's my first time in South Dakota, as a matter of fact. So that's something off the checklist. I know they've had events in the past there, so I'm really looking forward to checking things out, and it should be a very exciting game as well.
Yeah, I've broadcast games at South Dakota and South Dakota State, but I've never gone into that arena in Sioux Falls. And again, I've heard cool things. It's the Field of 68 event that's going to take place, and they're going to match up against Santa Clara. So Santa Clara is a team that historically is pretty darn good. This is a really good test for the Billikens to open up the season.
It really is. It's a great opportunity for both programs to see if they can pick up a quality non-conference victory to start the season. Santa Clara won 20 games last year. They, you know, Herb Sendak has been a well-respected coach for many, many years around the country at different stops. And they're picked third or fourth, depending on what poll you look at, in a very good West Coast conference. Of course, it's led by St. Mary's with former Billiken assistant Randy Bennett and Gonzaga. They're kind of the bellwethers, but Santa Clara is good. You know, they got good size. They got a 7-footer, and they got a 6'10". Both guys are starters, can play, and they got a guy that's a pro prospect, Adama Alfa-Bow, a 6'7" forward, who kind of flirted with going pro last year, but he came back. So it's going to be a good test, and looking forward to the challenge.
Team picked up 2 wins during the exhibition portion of the season, as they were expected to do against Rockhurst and Maryville. No disrespect to those programs, but they are built in so for SLU to just get some work in. What did you take away, if anything, from those 2 exhibitions?
Well, the main thing is I believe we got Robbie Avila back healthy. You know, of course, during the preseason scrimmage, he injured his ankle and was out of action for several weeks. But he was able to come back for that last scrimmage, played 17 minutes, looked really good, got a good sweat going. And, of course, everybody knows he's one of the best big men in the country. So just the fact that I think he's going to be full go going into the regular season, that's big. I think it's going to be interesting because we got a lot of different options. Obviously, you look at Robbie, you look at Gibson, Jimerson as veterans, and Isaiah Swope. They're kind of the big three. And then you got about eight guys who are quality players who are really going to battle. I think one revelation was Kobe Johnson, the 6'4 guard out of West Virginia, a senior, really shot the ball well in the two preseason games. Of course, he was bought on maybe to be a defender, a veteran hand on the backcourt, but he really shot the ball very well from three-point range. And I think folks are going to be the other fifth starter is going to be Kalu Anya, a 6'8" transfer from Brown. Just plays with a lot of physicality and plays with a big motor around that basket. So I think it's a team that's going to be a lot of balance. You're going to shoot the ball from three quite a bit. And how we rebound and defend, that's going to tell a lot on how we do Monday and obviously throughout the rest of the season. Then there's a lot of other pretty good players to look at down the road.
Is it challenging that for Coach Church, just in the sense that he comes in, there's a handful of guys that stuck around from last year. He also brings in some players from Indiana State. So it's almost like kind of bringing in together two different groups plus the new players that you bring in. But that's a little bit of a unique situation, maybe not quite as unique now with the transfer portal, and players do follow coaches a little bit more often now than in the past. But historically speaking, you wouldn't have that where kind of two groups are being brought together to form one team.
Yeah, it's really unique, but then like you said, it's what we are, not what it is right now. It's unique because he brings Isaiah and he brings Robbie with him from Indiana State. Not only are they great players, but they're veterans and they know his system, so they're kind of almost like assistant coaches on the floor. And then you got, it's like three different groups, as you said. Then you got the three holdovers, Gibson, Larry Hughes II, and Kellen Thames as well. And then everybody else, then you got a group of transfers or freshmen coming into the mix. So you're trying to, you know, intertwine all of these entities into a smooth unit. So it's going to be a work in progress throughout the preseason, non-conference, and going into the conference season as well. And like I say, it's a challenge that a lot of different coaches have around the country because of the portal. But it's a unique challenge, obviously, here. And it's got a lot of quality players. And you, if you want to get to a 7-8-9-man rotation, it's a challenge because you got a lot of different guys here who are capable of contributing on a nightly basis, which is a good thing.
Obviously, still early going, and you only show so much during exhibition play. And we'll find out a lot more as conference season, non-conference season moves along. But what did you think from a chemistry standpoint? Did it seem like guys were working together well?
It did. It took, like I said, starting with the second half of the Rockhurst game, and that's the game Robbie didn't play. It took a while. You could see guys get in tune with each other. The passing was well. Then the second game, you saw crisp ball movement, and they just did a nice job making the extra pass. You saw a lot of hockey assists, guys moving without the basketball. I think that's going to be a big core to the offense, the spacing, the movement, the ability to just move the basketball. And I think having Robbie back for that game, that made it a lot easier as well. So I think, like you said, that's going to be a challenge. Now you're facing a high-level team from a conference. That's going to be a good test to see where we are at this point of the season.
In no way, shape, or form do I ask this next question trying to take a shot at Coach Ford. Great, good man, good coach. He did some really good things at SLU, and we wish him best of luck moving forward. But my question is, does what feels different, like from a culture standpoint, an environment standpoint, whatever it might be, what feels different moving from Coach Ford to Coach Schertz?
Well, every coach has its different styles of play and everything. I know Travis when he was with St. Lucie, when we had our successful teams, we were built on toughness, rebounding, playing good defense, and, you know, I always said attack the rim, attack the paint. And we won a lot of games doing that, and it was a lot of fun doing that. While this was Coach Schertz, we got to play solid defense, but his style is more three-point shooting. You know, it's kind of more the analytics. You know, you're shooting the three, you're shooting, driving to the layup and getting to the free throw line or shooting the layup, not many mid-range shots in there. So that's kind of more what a lot of, you know, Nate Oates at Alabama has done that, got them to a Final Four. You see a lot of coaches subscribe to that. So you see a lot of the pace and space type of thing. It's almost kind of like watching with Rick Majerus when he was here at St. Louis University. So it's kind of different styles. Both great guys, great to work with, and we're very successful with what they've been able to do.
SLU opens up the season coming up Monday afternoon, 2 o'clock, the tip-off from Sioux Falls, South Dakota, as they take on Santa Clara. Our coverage with Bob Ramsey and Missouri Sports Hall of Famer Earl Austin Jr. is set to begin at about 1:45. Earl, great to talk to you. I'm sure we'll check in during the course of the season. Thank you for the time, and again, congratulations on the Hall of Fame induction. Very, very cool.
Thank you, Matt. I appreciate the time. Call anytime.
Awesome. That's Earl Austin Jr. joining us on the program. We appreciate him greatly. And, man, he is completely deserving of his honor going into the Missouri Sports Hall of Fame. We'll take a break, and when we return, we'll talk Mizzou football. They're not playing this weekend, but it's a big weekend for them to reset and see what they can accomplish. They've still got the opportunity to have a very special season, but some things have to go right. We'll talk with Eli Hoff from the Post-Dispatch and STL Today. We'll do that next. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. It's also an off weekend for Missouri football. They sit with a record of 6-2, which sounds great, but you're not going to find a lot of people out there that are overly positive about the program because of their two losses and the one-sided nature, including the latter last time out when they fell at Alabama 34-0. To talk through all things Tigers football, also talk a little Mizzou basketball with him, we welcome back onto the program our friend Eli Hoff. You read him in the Post-Dispatch, also at STL Today. He's on Twitter at @ElyHoff. Eli, thanks for taking some time. How are you?
Of course, I'm doing well. I think better than a lot of Mizzou fans are, so that's a good thing in my book. How are you doing tonight?
I am good. It's good to be able to chat with you, and the Tigers are kind of at a reset point here with the off weekend, and then they go into a stretch where they'll play Oklahoma, South Carolina, Mississippi State, and Arkansas. They have a chance to put together a 10-2 season if they beat all those teams, and all those teams are very beatable, but at the same time, if they put together efforts like they had against Alabama and Texas A&M, that's probably not happening. There's a lot of questions about this team. How do you kind of evaluate this team right now? A good record of 6-2, but a kind of a negative feeling about them.
Yeah, it's really been tough to reconcile just the on-paper talent of this team and what the expectations were and what the opportunity was, frankly, with the favorability of this schedule, within what this team is actually shown in some of these games where they've been tested and needed to come out and show something better than they have, frankly. And I think it's that kind of disconnect that has a lot of people frustrated, because just everything we were talking about in July and August, even before that, and just building up hype for this season, so little of that has actually materialized. So, you know, it's a good time for a bye week, a chance to get Brady Cook, you know, get him time to heal up on multiple fronts, frankly, which is kind of crazy, and let this team figure out what these next four games are going to look like, because the four games at the end of the year that I think a lot of people thought would be four wins, now there's an argument to be made that, you know, there might only be one or two in that section. So it's definitely a reset happening as far as just the atmosphere around this team.
Is it a failure that they have not been able to get better quarterback play when Cook has not been available?
I've gone back and forth with that, to be honest with you, because you look around college football and some of the best teams are the teams that do have a backup option they can turn to at times. Like, you look at Texas A&M as the top of the SEC right now, and that's because they've had two different quarterbacks who can come in at different times. But at the same time, that feels sort of unfair to call a team a failure if they don't have a good backup quarterback. You look at who the backups are at schools like Georgia. Not a great option at backup. They'd be in a tough spot without a good backup option. Even a school like LSU, they have a transfer from Vanderbilt who wasn't the greatest. And the thing too, Drew Pine hasn't been good the last two games, but I think if you'd ask people in August, just based on his resume, is he a decent backup quarterback to have? A lot of people felt pretty comfortable there. And I think it's safe to say that Drew Pine is in general a better quarterback than he's shown, but he's shown what he's shown, and that's the body of evidence that's out there. So it's tough for me to call it a failure on anybody's part, but it's definitely been a shortcoming, and it's something that could prove really, really costly if Drew Pine has to play in these final four games in any capacity.
Yeah, that's my next question. Do you get any sense? I know they can kind of lock things down here on an off week and not a lot of information is going to get out, but do you get any sense on when, if the whatever the health situation is for Brady Cook and how that might impact the team moving forward?
Yeah, well, first, you're right to say it's been locked down. I'd asked Eli Drinkwitz on an SEC teleconference that coaches have with media this week. I'd asked him two questions. I asked him first, does he expect Brady Cook to be back this season? And he said, yes, he does. He wasn't going to specify when, but he said at some point this season. And then I also asked him just, is it the ankle or this hand or wrist injury that popped up against A&M or against Alabama, excuse me, you know, which is it that's the priority? And he didn't want to answer that either. He said some nonsense about it, Brady's soul needing to be mended. So that's the direction he's wanted to go. He doesn't want the information out there. Yeah. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's a situation where I think there's a right now a non-zero chance that Brady Cook is missing time coming out of this bye week. You know, it's more likely he misses the Oklahoma game than the Arkansas game, right? Just in terms of the time it'll take, but we just don't know for certain. I think what's clear though is that during this bye week, Mizzou needs to be figuring out a way to be able to score points with Drew Pine on the field, because it seems like there's a strong chance they're going to need to be able to do that at some point in these last four games, and maybe to a significant degree, we just probably won't know.
Do you get the sense, and again, this is a hard question to ask on an off week, but do you get the sense that the negative talk about this team from people like us has infiltrated the team, whereas they are very aware now that going into the season with a top 10 ranking and all that and college football playoff being talked about, that's really essentially off the table now. How do they go about making sure that the disappointment of what this season has turned into does not turn into more losses down the stretch?
I mean, that's the challenge, and that's where what this season has become in this bye week is something that is going to test this coaching staff on a lot of ways. One, like I just mentioned, you know, getting the offense to work with a backup quarterback, but it also tests the culture that Eli Drinkwitz has built and this whole something to prove mindset, this wilderness brotherhood, all of that. It's easy to do all of that when you're getting results on the field, when you can say, those things I talked about, we're doing them on the field and it's working and we're winning. That's easy to get guys to buy in. It's a lot harder when it's not working, when the things they've bought into are leading to getting smacked around at A&M, coming back and getting smacked around at Alabama. That's tough. When you see a guy like Brady Cook just getting hurt like this through no fault of his own and just, you know, not being able to be out there, that tests any team. And then when the external atmosphere around the team, when that sours, you know, these guys are all on social media. They're not immune to what is being said about this team, just like they weren't immune to all the excitement of the summer. It's the opposite side of the coin, but really the same core problem here. And it's going to be one heck of a test for what Eli Drinkwitz has built at Missouri.
We're talking with Eli Hoff from the Post-Dispatch and STL Today. Let's jump over to Mizzou basketball. They opened up the season on Monday. A good test to get the season started. They play at Memphis. What an interesting kind of place for this program to be in. 2 years ago, Dennis Gates' first season, they're incredible. Last year, their record is terrible. They recruited off that first season somehow, some way in today's era of college basketball. They're able to keep that recruiting class together coming into this year, even coming off a bad season last year. And now, for me, it's hard to assess what this team is even going to look like and how good they can be. What are you seeing here in the early going? They played one exhibition. They've been out on the practice floor.
Yeah, and even that exhibition, you know, they doubled up Lincoln, who's a Division II team. You know, I don't know how much you can realistically take away from a game like that. It's so tough to evaluate. 10 newcomers, 5 guys from the portal, 5 freshmen. You know, you can look at every stat that's out there. You could watch every bit of film that's out there on these guys. But you don't know what it's going to look like until they're actually on the floor together. I talked to some of the coaches back in the spring, and they were saying that you know, they feel good about this portal class, but they don't know until they get them in the gym and start trying things out. So that's what this non-conference schedule is built to be. It'll be a real test on the road against Memphis. That's a legit tough non-conference game that they're going to get a very early, very clear baseline. And then they're able to go kind of into the lab, to speak metaphorically, and have a lot of home non-conference games against small-scale opponents, a lot of, you know, bye games, and try things out, keep ramping it back up, and then start December with more big-time games, with Cal coming to town, Kansas, and then Bragging Rights versus Illinois, and test out what they've worked on. So I'm someone who really like that approach from Dennis Gates as far as the scheduling this year. I think that's the right way to go about it. But, you know, it'll come down to how much talent there is that came in from the portal and what these freshmen can do and what the returners from last year can do. I think they all still have a pretty bitter taste in their mouths from that performance. So it should be a motivated group, that's for sure.
Last thing for you, and we could probably talk about this for over an hour and not get into all aspects of it, and I would encourage everybody to read your latest at stltoday.com and in the Post-Dispatch. Missouri announcing that they're fully going to be opting into revenue sharing. This is connected to the antitrust settlement in House versus the NCAA, a $2.8 billion settlement. And what this means is there's going to be millions of dollars that are going to be directly shared with athletes at Missouri. Now, the direct impact on fans is that ticket prices are going to be going up, but this is a big deal, and it impacts a lot of schools. Missouri is not alone, but this is a lot of money that's going to be coming out of the Missouri Athletic Department and headed to student-athletes.
Yeah, well, you're right to say we could talk about this for hours. I spent about half an hour with Laird Beach, the athletic director, yesterday and asking him questions about this, and we barely scratched the surface. Like you mentioned, I'd encourage people to go read the story we have out on it. We go into a lot of detail here, and it's a lot of good perspective from Laird. Kind of the basic gist is, you know, revenue sharing is going to be to college sports what NIL and the transfer portal has been. It's going to be transformational, and it's going to cost athletic departments at least another $22 million a year. That's how much they can give to athletes. And so Mizzou's seeing this as a time when they need to increase the amount of revenue that's coming in. And Mizzou sits 13th out of the 16 teams in the SEC in terms of revenue generation. They want to be more around the average, be more around, you know, spot 8 or spot 9 in the SEC, which means they need to bring in about $35 million a year more in revenue. As Laird explained it yesterday, you know, in years past, Mizzou could say, well, let's fill the football stadium, and then that'll help us with revenue. They've been doing that, 12 straight sellouts. They're maxing out what they can get out of football revenue. So they see it as, all right, well, it's time to raise the prices. That's something that Laird was saying for season tickets. They haven't done in about a dozen years. He thinks it's long overdue. There'll be some other more nuanced shifts in the fundraising model, but the bottom line here is, you know, they feel like they need to be getting more revenue from the ticket sales front, from fans. They realize what they're asking. They're committing to trimming expenses too, but college sports, it's getting more and more expensive to compete year in, year out, especially in a league like the SEC. Missouri is where it wants to be as far as being in that conference, but now to compete in it, that price tag is going up. But again, there are a lot of nuances to it. I think Laird Beach has been good in explaining his logic. All that's out there on STL Today. He'll be communicating more as kind of the specific numbers come out, because it is a complex thing. Fans are going to feel an impact, but it's a big deal in the college sports universe.
Really, really big deal. And I think you did a great job putting it all together. Eli, we always appreciate your time. Enjoy a weekend without college football, but getting ready for college basketball, and enjoy these next month and a half as you've got both going on. Thanks for your time.
For sure. It's a busy month, but a fun one. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Eli Hoff joining us from the Post-Dispatch and STL Today. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Just a couple minutes left here in hour number one of the program. Wanted to talk about the Blues for just a moment or so. They lose to the Flyers yesterday in Philadelphia 2-1. After beating the Maple Leafs 5-1 to open up that four-game road trip, one-sided losses against the Canadiens and Senators before playing close last night against the Flyers. Blues coach Drew Bannister spoke with the media earlier today. Thought this was interesting. He obviously thought that his team played better yesterday. You lose 2-1 as opposed to 8-1 or 5-2. Yeah, they played better. And when talking today, talked a little bit about trying to get some momentum in these games, and that's seemingly not really happening.
I I thought yesterday our guys stuck to the task, and momentum-wise, it was the game itself was kind of swung in our favor for most of the game, if not all of it. But it's the mistakes right now that are happening, they seem to be amplified right now, and you're kind of fighting an upward battle. But for us, I liked our game yesterday. I thought our competitive level was much higher than it was in the previous two. I thought defensively we did a real good job, and we make two mistakes and it ends up in the back of our net, and that's where we're at right now, and we have to be able to fight through that and make sure those situations so they don't happen.
So do you stress that to the guys coming in today that that was a good blueprint yesterday, it's just the result wasn't what we were hoping?
Yeah, I don't know. I think there's things in the game that maybe go unrecognized that we can be better at, that can really make us push to the next level and be a better hockey team as a group. And I think those are things that we look to point out more. This morning at the end of the day, we lost a hockey game. We're not happy with the result. We had an opportunity to push that to overtime and probably get 2 points out of it, but we come back home with only 2 out of 8 points in the road.
I really appreciated Drew Bannister's second part of the answer there, second part of what he said there, because he spent a fair amount of time discussing the things that went well in yesterday's game. And not that you should run away from that just because you lost a game. There's nothing wrong with mentioning the good things that happened, especially when you were coming off back-to-back 5-2 and 8-1 losses. Clearly, the effort was better yesterday. But when asked to basically double down on that and say, well, then is the focus on, hey, this is the blueprint? No, of course it's not the blueprint. You lost the game. A loss should never be the blueprint of what you want to do moving forward. And credit to Drew Bannister for his answer in saying that. That at the end of the day, they still lost a hockey game. At the end of the day, there's still stuff they need to do better. I get a little concerned when it's this early on in the season and we're already doing the what went right in losses thing. That's something that I think you do in February when you're running out of gas. Not so much at this point, but I did appreciate Bannister's second part of the answer. They play Toronto at home tomorrow. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
For the past 3 seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a 4th season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you, and also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.